Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Later, gang, and have a great weekend.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine. And one of the joys of living in Washington is the ability to walk in to a congressional hearing room and to watch your and my government at work. You know, it's amazing that I can do this. I just walk in. If it's a really, really interesting hearing that's on all the channels, if it's, I don't know, Don Rumsfeld, or actually probably more like, I'm trying to think, maybe one of the Supreme Court nominee hearings, or when David Petraeus was, okay, then it's tough. Then you got to get up at 4 in the morning, and the way the lobbyists do it is they pay homeless people to stand in line for them. And they get some bum on the street, and that bum stands in line, and they give the guy $10 or $20, and then the lobbyist walks in the fresh, cleaning, smelling suit at 9 a.m. in time for the hearing. But if it's not one of those, and most hearings in Washington are not like that, I mean, that's really rare. It's like once a month, something like that. Good old Joe Citizen, that would be me, can just walk right in. Oh, I mean, there's a metal detector. I don't want anyone to think, get the wrong idea. You know, they check you. But no, you just walk right in and you attend the hearings. And I obviously, when I worked in Washington, I did that because I was one of those people that you probably have seen sitting behind the members of Congress. You know, you have the, all the members of Congress in these plush leather chairs. And you, I don't know if you ever noticed, but sitting behind them are a bunch of people. They're usually young. Usually in their 20s, but they can be any age. And actually what we're sitting on is a very uncomfortable wooden bench. And in fact, the way it works is there's these columns that come out by the windows, because I don't know if we're supposed to be sitting there, you know, back when the building was designed, but they kind of dig into your back. So it's literally a painful experience to sit through those congressional hearings. And I think I still got pain in my back to prove it. But as a member of the public, I get to sit in the front. And honestly, I got a few friends there, and if it's crowded, they can slip me around the side. And I still go, and I still attend congressional hearings. And one of the most interesting hearings occurred just last week and got very little press. It was the Armed Services Committee. You may recall that the last Armed Services Committee, you had General Petraeus and you had John McCain and Hillary Clinton asking tough questions, and then he went on to the Foreign Services Committee, and that was Barack Obama. A lot of press for that one. Well, there was very little press when the top lawyer for the Pentagon, a man by the name of William Jim Haynes II, we'll just call him Jim, but when William Jim Haynes II appeared before Congress this week, did you hear about it? Because I didn't really hear about it. I mean, it wasn't on CNN. I mean, I guess it may have been somewhere. But I wanted to hear from the Pentagon's top lawyer. And this is the Defense Department. And we all know what the lawyers for George Bush did. People like John Yoo, my ex Yale Law School buddy. Well, I won't really call him a buddy. Let's just say classmate, because we weren't exactly buddies. But you know what John Yoo wrote? He wrote the memos that authorized torture. Now, he didn't call it torture because you're not allowed to call it torture. See, calling something torture, well, that makes it dangerous. You can actually do torture. That's not a problem. I mean, you can totally put bamboo shoots under someone's fingernails. That's okay. Just don't call it torture, because then you'll get in trouble. And John Rew wrote the famous memo in 2002, the one that said that if you don't kill someone and you don't cause permanent organ failure, it ain't torture. So you can cause organ failure, right? You can cause the heart to stop. You just can't cause it to stop permanently. You could shut down the lungs, just not permanently. And bamboo shoots on the fingernails, easy, because they're, you know, fingernails. There's that's not an organ. Heck, you could probably cut off someone's arm. I don't think there are any organs in the arm. So it left for, shall we say, a little bit of leeway. Well, I knew what the president's lawyer had written, but I hadn't heard from the Pentagon's lawyer. And Jim Haines was the Pentagon's lawyer way back in 02 when it mattered. And he is known for sending a memo to Don Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense at the time, recommending stress positions. Now, when I say stress positions, I don't mean like you and I underneath a lot of stress. I mean twisting someone's arm in a way that, let's just say, is extremely uncomfortable. Or someone's leg. Or someone's head. This isn't hands behind the back, perp walk in handcuffs. I don't know if you've ever read The Wizard of Id, that cartoon. I don't really read it very much. But I always, when I think of stress positions, I always think of those guys that are chained up to the wall. You know, the ones with their hands above their head and hanging down and talking to each other. That's the stress position. Well, Haines wasn't just recommending stress positions. He was recommending nudity, because we all know how much fun it is to play with nude men. Because, let's face it, you're less uncomfortable if you're nude. That's why the old strapping the genitalia with the electrodes is seen at Abu Ghraib as a decent idea. And dogs. Lots of people are scared of snarling dogs that can bite you for understandable reasons. Light deprivation, you know, putting people in dark for days on end. Again, think Wizard of Id. Think Spanish Inquisition. Think not torture, because they told us it isn't torture. So there you go. But Jim Haines came and testified just a couple days ago. And before him, it was interesting, before he testified, there were a whole group of people that told the Senate committee of their concerns. By the way, this, of course, is a hearing that could only happen under the Democrats. The Republicans would never look into the treatment of prisoners because, you know, they're Republicans. They believe in torture. Heck, they wish they were at the Spanish Inquisition. They would have had so much fun being Torquemada and But anyway, the Democrats, of course, are exploring this because they believe that we have a right to know. So even though this happened back in 02, the first hearing is now in 08. But before Haines came to testify, first there's the top lawyer for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Okay, he's the lawyer for the Pentagon. And he said that the services had concerns. You know what that means? That means that the military was saying, don't do this, don't do this, this is stupid, don't do this. Strong objections is how it was put. And then there was a another woman that said she was shocked at Jim Haines' memo. And then there was the counsel for the Navy that said his legal reasoning was inadequate. All right, so it was time for Jim Haines. And he's up before the Senate. And you know what? I kind of felt like maybe he needed a little bit of torture because he really wasn't answering their questions. Here are some of the questions and answers, and I wish I had them, the audio. I just have to bring you audio next time. Anyway, here are the questions and answers. Quote, Jim Haines, did you ask a subordinate to get information about harsh questioning techniques? It's really a pretty easy question. In other words, when you get to these horrible techniques, did you make it up yourself or did you ask someone about it? Quote, my memory is not perfect, unquote. Do you remember doing something with the information that you got? Quote, I don't remember doing something with this information, unquote. When did you discuss the torture methods with Bush administration officials? Quote, I don't know precisely when, and I cannot discuss it further without getting into classified information, unquote. To which point, Senator Carl Levin said, this is great. Carl Levin said, you say you don't remember it any more clearly than what you've said. Therefore, going into classified session isn't going to give us any more information than what you said, which is you had conversations, but your memory is bad. Correct, Haynes said. And that's all you remember? Correct, Haynes said. So you got it? Sir, I can't discuss that. That's classified. But you just told us you don't remember, right? So if we went to classified session, you couldn't remember if you can't remember now, right? Right. So classified session wouldn't help us any, right? Right. But you just said we had to go into classified session. It gets so hard when you're tripped up in your lies, right? He's like saying, I don't remember, I don't remember, I don't remember, that's classified. How do you remember, how do you know it's classified if you don't remember? When's contempt when you need it? You know, it's the reason why they got to frog march Harriet Myers. I want to see the Democrats do that. I mean, I know John Conyers wants to, but if they don't do that, how are we ever going to get him to talk? Now, I'm not advocating torture, although I have to admit with Haynes, I thought about it. But I'm not advocating torture him, but he needs to lock up until he, maybe it jogs his memory. You know, it's funny, he began his statement, I guess, his testimony, so-called, his non-memorable portion. He said he doesn't have a formal opening statement. And then he went ahead and read his formal opening statement. I mean, we're living in Jabberwocking land here. And he defended all the things he couldn't remember doing by saying, quote, we all rightly fear another assault on our country, perhaps even more horrific than the last. So you got it? He doesn't remember doing, first of all, if he did anything wrong, it should be in classified session. But he doesn't remember doing anything wrong. And by the way, if he did do anything wrong, it's okay because we're in danger and they're about to kill us. You know, it's very hard to get their lies straight. It kind of reminds me of that old legal case that they say that a guy was up before the judge and he was accused of borrowing his neighbor's lawnmower and returning it broken. And he said, well, first of all, I never borrowed the lawnmower, Your Honor. And secondly, I returned it in perfect condition. And third, it was broken when I took it. Well, you know, there's Jim Haynes. Everything I did is classified, but I don't remember what I did. And anything I did was justified, even though I have no idea what I did because I have had a terrible memory lapse. I mean, even Republican Lindsey Graham, when he asked him, when he became aware of John Yoo's famous torture memo, Haynes said, quote, I don't know when I became aware of that. Claire McCaskill asked him about the legal objections. I don't recall seeing that. Jack Reed asked why he didn't get opposing viewpoints. Quote, I don't know that I was aware of those. I don't recall being aware of any particular memoranda. Got it? So even though the military has just testified one after the other that they had strong objections, Haynes just doesn't know that he was aware of those. I guess the military should have written it down. I mean, next we're going to have to – you know how they do videotapes for police cars where they have the interrogations and they have to do the videotape because you want to make sure the police doesn't hit the guy? We're going to need videotapes for briefings to White House lawyers because – they don't remember hearing anything. But he was upset. He was upset. He said, Senator, you just don't understand how things work. He said, I mean, there are thousands and thousands of decisions made every day. This was just one decision. You know, putting someone out in the cold until they die of hypothermia is something the Nazis did. But it's just another day at the Defense Department. How's he going to remember? I mean, every day for him is like the Nazis. Yeah, first he tortures the prisoners, then there's the cold, the hypothermia, the stress positions, the dogs, the nudity. Who can remember them all? It gets just so complicated. I mean, when you're torturing each and every person, and then they scream, and then you gotta, I don't keep records. It's just a daily occurrence. It's not that big a deal. Well, Senator Reed of Rhode Island, one of my favorites, thought it was a big deal. He said, quote, "You did a disservice to the soldiers of this nation. You empowered them to violate basic conditions which every soldier respects, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the Geneva Convention. You degraded the integrity of the United States." Think about it. We put people on trial at Nuremberg for just following orders. The death camp guards, the Nazi death camp guards, I mean, some of them may have been sadistic. Some of them may have wanted to do what they did, no doubt. But many of them, at least according to their defense, they were just following orders. They were doing awful things, just following orders. Jim Haynes, the Pentagon lawyer, was giving the orders. He wasn't even just following orders. He was giving the orders. He was taking ordinary, decent human beings, as I think for the most part 99% of our military is, and teaching them how to torture and telling them it's okay. And as he put it, and these are direct quotes, this is a direct quote of all these lines of things he said in a 2-minute period. I quote, "I don't recall seeing this memorandum before, and I'm not even sure this is one I've seen before. I don't recall seeing this memorandum, and I don't recall specific objections of this nature. Well, I don't recall seeing this document either. I don't recall specific concerns. I don't recall these, and I don't recall seeing these memoranda. I can't even read this document, but I don't remember seeing it. I don't recall that specifically. I don't remember doing that. I don't recall seeing these things." In 2 hours of testimony, Haynes didn't recall 23 times, didn't remember 22 times, didn't know 16 times. And that's just those three phrases. It makes you wonder, if we had tortured Jim Haynes, you think he would have remembered? Toll-free numbers, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Anything on your mind, Freestyle Thursday. Let me know what you're thinking. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
there's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Quad Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in the news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com. A place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Otherwise, there's still lots of ways to reach me. I do monitor the chat room, as you know, the Head-On chat room. If, by the way, you're listening and you've never been to the Head-On chat room, go to my website, radioinsidescoop.com. Click on the Head-On chat room. There's always a group of fun regulars in there doing everything from saying moof, it's kind of an inside joke, they'll explain it if you get there, to talking about the issues. Check it out. You really should. The other thing you can do is if you want to comment on anything I say live during the show, go to radioinsidescoop.com, click on today's show, and let me know your thoughts, and I'll read some of your comments on the air. I was reading what Lott was writing in the chat room. The Republicans, she was citing an article, by the way, from the Huffington Post, that the Republicans may throw John McCain out and get a different nominee. No. No way, Lott. I don't believe it at all. You know, people can write anything they want, but I don't believe it. Sorry. If you do, Lott, tell me why. I mean, call in. Let me know. I just think it's a lot of speculation. Another person who's speculating is my good friend Robert, who writes in on the blog, and he suggests the possible vice presidential candidates. And Robert disagrees with you, too. Robert suggests for McCain, Chuck Hagel, Mitt Romney, and Jeb Bush. Sorry, Robert. I think wrong. He says Chuck Hagel because Hagel is the one Republican who's against the war in Iraq, which is why, Robert, I think he's the one Republican that I am sure John McCain won't put on the ticket. John McCain plans to run on Iraq. We'll talk a little bit about Iraq a little bit later on because, they're not going to accept our permanent bases there, so I don't know what Bush and McCain are going to do. But no. I don't see how he could possibly put Chuck Hagel on the ticket. Mitt Romney, no way. No way. McCain hates Romney. And Romney hates McCain, even though Romney is sucking up to McCain. And everyone sees Romney as a suck-up. And about the only person who's flip-flopped more than John McCain is Mitt Romney. No. I don't see it. Don't see it in a million years. But I do think there's a greater chance of picking Mitt Romney than Jeb Bush, the ex-governor of Florida, the brother of the current president. Of the three, Hagel, Romney, and Bush, that you suggest, Robert, I think Bush is the least likely because McCain is running as far as he can from our president or anyone who shares his name. George Bush has a 25% approval rating. He has a 68% disapproval rating. His approval rating is the third lowest in American history, just barely above Nixon's and Truman's. At 24 and 22, but it's the highest disapproval ever of any president at any time. I mean, you understand how it works. More people are decided. That's why, Truman and Nixon may have had low approval ratings, but their disapprovals weren't as high either. There were a lot of more people who were unsure. People aren't unsure about George W. Bush. A quarter of the country approves. And 68% disapprove. More than two-thirds of the country disapproves. The highest for any president at any time since they've done polling, which is since Harry Truman. That's pretty high. I guess people are starting to finally realize Bush did a lousy job. You know, it's funny. I came into radio in 2003, 5 years ago. Oh, you know what? Is it my five-year anniversary? I need some music. Hold on. I got to check my own website because I don't remember. Isn't that sad? So I'm going to my website. I'm clicking Broadcast Archive Blog. It's going to take some time to download because if you've ever been to my website, you know I keep all my shows on my website. I have trouble throwing things away. I don't throw anything away ever. I've got closets full of stuff. I have my notes from high school. Anyone else like me? Anyway, I can't throw anything away, and I certainly wasn't going to throw any radio shows away, so I keep it all on my website. It just takes a while to download. Here it is, June 22nd, 03. So, hold on, Friday's the 20th, Sunday. All right, so this Monday will be my five-year anniversary. What have you gotten me? Huh? Where's my present? I'm five Monday. This is my last show before I turn five. And I want to go to kindergarten. I want, you know, stuff. Praise, something, call in, congratulate me. I don't know. I will be 5 years on the radio Sunday, next week, Monday. So I thought it was close to my five-year anniversary. But the point I was making was that I've been on the air 5 years. And I remember when I first came on the air 5 years ago, because George Bush's approval rating was in the 70s. God, doesn't that seem like light years away? It was in the 70s. You know, all Republicans and half the Democrats. And I was a voice crying in the wilderness. Do you know how few of us opposed the war in Iraq? Maybe 20-something percent of us? That's it. Because we all believed. We all believed all the lies he told us. And you know what? I don't even blame people for that. I really don't. I don't blame Hillary Clinton for voting for the war. I know a bunch of you do. That's your right. As far as I'm concerned, he tricked a whole bunch of people. Why wasn't I tricked? I don't know. Maybe because he wasn't really president. The way I figure it, he wasn't rightly there to begin with. Al Gore won the election. He won the majority of people in Florida and in the United States. And so, you know, I kind of figured anything he said was probably a lie. Heck, we didn't vote for the guy. He was usurping the throne. I don't know. I think part of it was just I wanted to see the hard evidence. I wanted the smoking gun. I didn't believe in invading a country that never attacked us. I supported getting the inspectors in there. I did. I support getting inspectors in Iran or North Korea. It wasn't that I don't worry about enemies of the United States, but I just didn't see any purpose for the war. But I remember 5 years ago, when I was first started on radio, and I want to thank all of you. I look in the chat room, and I got a cake, and I got ice cream, and all right, people are remembering my birthday. There you go. I will be five this Monday. But God, 5 years in radio, you know? And I basically told myself that if I didn't, I gave myself a five-year plan. I'm embarrassed to admit this, but this will just be between us, okay? I mean, it's just us, right? Right here on the horn. I told myself 5 years ago, Monday, that if I didn't make it in 5 years, I was going to do something else. And I even defined what making it means. And I'm afraid to say, by my own definition, I haven't made it. My definition of making it was that either Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, or Bill O'Reilly, one of them would make up a lie about me. And it hasn't happened yet. And I'm so disappointed. I was sure by now I would have caused enough trouble for them to lie about me, but I guess I haven't yet. Well, I'm still working on it. I'm still working on causing enough trouble, and, you know, you can help it out by telling people about my show. You know, I don't ask you for money. You know, I ask you occasionally for pictures on the chat room. All I ask for is that you let people know that you like the Inside Scoop and that you tell listeners about it. Sign up for my mailing list on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. Let people know we're out there. Because Bob and I and Guy and Peter, and everybody works very, very hard. John Fox, to do this, and God knows we don't get paid for it. So, you know, all you can do is tell people about the horn, and that's my pitch for the moment. I do want to go back, though, to Robert's list of vice presidential candidates. because Robert lists three for Obama. First, he lists Russ Feingold. Now, I love Russ Feingold. I do. Senator Feingold of Wisconsin is honest. He is as pure as you can get and still be a politician. He's never taken lobbyist money. He is someone who is the only senator in the entire Senate who voted against the Patriot Act. If you ever want to know the details about that, you got to call in, but I'll be happy to share them with you. I love Rice Feingold. I fear that the media would treat Russ Feingold as too liberal. I think it's a terrific choice. I think it's an inspired choice. I don't think it's going to happen, Robert. First of all, I just don't think he's going to have two senators. I think he'll probably reach out to have a governor or someone or a military man, something like that. It would be a terrific choice. I'll grant you that, Robert. I just don't think it's going to happen. Second choice Obama picks, Robert picks for Obama, Obama will do the picking, is Joe Biden. Now, I like Senator Biden. I respect Senator Biden. I think Biden was a little slow on the Iraq War, but I do think he's an honorable man. I think he means well. I've talked with Biden at length about Iraq and other things. I don't think Obama's going to pick Biden. We don't need Delaware. I think we've got it, but if we don't have it, it's only three electoral votes. Joe Biden, I think, would make a terrific Secretary of State. I actually got my cabinet planned, by the way. I've got Joe Biden for Secretary of State. I got Wesley Clark for Secretary of Defense. John Edwards for Attorney General. Bill Richardson could do a number of different things, energy or commerce or lots of things. And Hillary Clinton, I'd like to appoint her to the Supreme Court. That's right, Clinton fans. And not only that, but if Obama sets up a whisper campaign, not, you know, maybe one of his aides could do it, that Hillary Clinton will get a Supreme Court berth. I think he could bring a lot of the Clintonites in line. Because, you know, vice president is one thing, but vice presidents don't have all that much power, honestly. But a Supreme Court justice has more power than a vice president. And all those Clinton lovers, and I have a lot of them, I got a lot of friends who are Clinton lovers who are still kind of hurting after the primaries, do a whispering campaign about her on the Supreme Court, and I think that that'll really help Obama. I really do. Which is why I don't think Hillary Clinton, sorry Robert, which is Robert's third choice for vice president, I don't think she'll be chosen for vice president. Supreme Court justice. We need another woman on the court. She's brilliant. She's a good lawyer, Yale Law School. She's got the right heart for it. And she could actually step back from some of the politics where she's not as, what's the best word I can use? Let's say not as polished as she should be. And really focus on using the law to help people. Roe v. Wade would be secure. Let's start a Hillary for Supreme Court Justice campaign. John Paul Stevens is 88 years old. I'm worried about the man. Every day I pray that he is alive and well and doing good. But I just don't think he's going to last another 5 years. We need Obama, and I support Hillary for Supreme Court Justice. I've got Corey on the line. If you want to call in, by the way, it's 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Corey, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, hi, Mark. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I understand that you watched the same hearing I watched.
Actually, I spent up until 2 o'clock this morning finishing on C-SPAN the total 7 or 8 hour fiasco for the three panels that were offered. And
saw more than I did. I only saw about 3 hours. I mean, you, I'm impressed. You're more of a junkie than me. That's a lot.
Please don't be impressed. I did watch all three panels. I can't remember all the names. I do remember Lieutenant Colonel Richard Beaver. I remember Rear Admiral, I can't remember what his name is, and Mr. Murrah on the second panel. And then we had the great
Jim Haynes. Tell me this. What did you think of Jim Haynes? Were you counting the I don't recalls?
I beg your pardon?
Were you counting the I don't recalls and the I don't knows and the I don't remembers? Because I started making lists.
No, I don't count them. I just sit there and view the emotional impact of where he is at the time. And I look at facial expressions. I look at body language. And it was pretty amazing to me between tabs 11 or 12 16 or 17, whatever they were, that he didn't recall because they weren't addressed to him.
Yeah, just to be clear what those tabs were, just so people know, these were the military's objections to Haynes' torture program.
That is correct.
And so here you had a document.
These are military corrections from the legal counsels of the Army, the Navy, the Marines, and all of our armed forces that did not approve of anything that came on with the whole problem of the
torture,
ARA or whatever it is,
torture
solutions in terms of defensive tactics that were in training for our military people.
And right. I mean, what happened is, it's interesting. I've been reading about this, Corey, is that what Rumsfeld did is, we had already trained our military for some years now on how to try to defend themselves against torture. So if you're in a stress position, what do you do? If you're, beaten, what do you do? And if you're being waterboarded, what do you do? So what we did is we took our manual for how to try to resist torture for the U.S. military, and Don Rumsfeld literally reverse engineered it. He's like, well, maybe we should try this torture. Maybe we should. He took the manual for defense against torture and took it as a list of techniques. I found that really amazing.
He took the first level, the second level, totally approved of that, and marginally put out into Never Never Land in some sort of Peter Pan perspective of anything that was going on the third level of torture techniques. But he definitely, in my purview of history with investigations that they've had previously, and inclusive of the one that the senator from Michigan as the head of the Armed Forces Committee.
Senator Levin.
Pretty much laid right on top. I mean, I was extremely surprised that Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, with the old Strom Thurmond seat, actually sat there and said what he said. It was absolutely
something.
Profound.
When people talk about the vice presidential choices for McCain, if he were going to pick a senator, he'd pick Lindsey Graham. They're very close together.
I don't know that you don't either, but I mean, let's talk about the issue of what happened in the investigation. And I think what came out is Mr. Haynes was pretty much feeling very protected by the powers in control, that, you know, he was pretty much sliding off all the stuff, and that's pretty much what they're doing. I mean,
Corey?
At the Siebelman case. And the inherent contempt threats that
that's exactly where I was going
and so on and so forth, and it's like,
you know, that's okay. My favorite topic, Corey. That's exactly where I was going. The reason why Haynes felt free to say, I don't remember, and it's all classified, and if I knew it, I didn't know it, and who knew it, and I don't remember. The reason is because when Congress demanded that Harriet Myers and Josh Bolten show up, they didn't, and when they declared him in contempt, they just laughed. Because now Congress is trying to hold them in contempt by going through the U.S. District Court. Why? Because they're cowards. Listen, the right of Congress to declare someone in contempt, they don't have to go to court. It's their right.
The final line on that, Mark, is actually Myers and
Bolten.
And Bolten are claiming executive privilege because they had direct contact with the presidency at that time. Now, Rove is saying, I never talked with Bush about this. Therefore,
you know, Rove also lied to Scott McClellan about Plame Wilson.
He is claiming executive privilege, but then he didn't talk with the president. Therefore, legally, there is no executive privilege.
That's a very good point, Corey. No, you're absolutely right, and they get caught up in their lies. It's like Haynes saying, well, it's classified, sir, and I don't remember. And you had Levin saying, well, if it's classified, then if we went into executive session and you don't remember, you couldn't tell us anything. Exactly the same thing. Rove says it's executive privilege, which means that it's privilege because it's all about communications between him and the president. And yet he says he didn't talk to the president. Well, you can't have it both ways. It's like my man, the lawnmower example. You know, all three may be good defenses, but if you put them together, they're absolutely meaningless. These people are caught up in their own lives, and the only possible way to make them do anything is to frog march them, to make them do the perp walk, to take Harriet Myers, put her in handcuffs, stick her in someone's office, feed her from time to time, because I don't believe in torture, but lock her up until she talks. And until Congress gets the cojones to do this, they're going to continue just to run out the clock. Hey, Corey, thank you so much for calling in. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for being online, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks for coming here on my fifth birthday. You know, I didn't even realize it was my fifth birthday until I looked it up. Toll-free number, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. We had an interesting visitor yesterday, almost from another planet, Marcelo da Luz, pulled up in a solar car that looked like a spaceship. Sleek blue on top with a gray bubble of a window. The car is so low to the ground that it's not even 3 feet high. It's got two wheels in front, one in back, and the chassis looks like a kayak. Marcelo da Luz made this car himself, and he's trying to set a world record by driving it 10,000 miles from Buffalo to Inuvik, Canada, up in the Arctic Circle. Some people go to the gas station to fill their tank, he tells me. We just pull over. The car's got an electric engine, but instead of plugging it into a wall, we plug it into the sun, he says. It's got solar cells just like solar panels on people's homes, and it's built out of foam covered in fiberglass. It goes 0 to 50 in 6 seconds, he says, and can reach a top speed of 75 miles an hour. Da Luz is promoting the idea of clean and sustainable energy, he says, but he's got a sharper point to make. He says if we're waiting for governments to save the planet, it's not going to happen. To find out more about this amazing car and the man behind it, go to xof1.com. That's xof1.com. It's people like Marcelo da Luz that may revolutionize the way we get around, and not a moment too soon. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. You know, the progressive minute with Matt Rothschild, I sometimes agree with Matt and sometimes I don't. But, well, he was right on today. And it actually segues nicely into my next point, which has to do with oil. If you heard the progressive minute, you heard that, yes, there is such thing. You probably didn't know it existed as a solar car. You may have known. I'm sorry. The horn audience is pretty sophisticated. Most Americans don't know that, yeah, here he has a solar car, runs on the sun. He's taking it up to the Arctic Circle. And you know what? Up in the Arctic Circle, it gets cold, but apparently he's still able to run his car. Now, I know it's out of the range of the price of most of us, but hey, so were the first cars. The point is, we do not have to be tethered to oil for the rest of our lives. If you were listening this week, you know that this was the week that John McCain flip-flopped, and I say that because he didn't just flip-flop, this is the third change of his position, on the question of offshore drilling. Now, it gets kind of complicated, so let me try to get it straight. First, he was for offshore drilling, and then he was against offshore drilling, and now he's for offshore drilling. He flip-flopped. Now, on Alaska, he's against drilling. So now John McCain wants to drill off the coast of California and Florida, thus possibly destroying the beaches there and the fish, without drilling in Alaska where they could destroy the caribou. Now, if you don't understand this position, don't worry. That means you're normal. If you do understand it, please seek professional help, because there's really no logic behind it. But, hey, the oil companies are financing him just as they financed the current president, who also called for offshore drilling this week. Now, offshore drilling off the coast of California and Florida may very well lead to an oil spill, like the Exxon Valdez spill up in Valdez, Alaska, that, guess what, some 16 years later still hasn't been paid for. But I'm sure the people of Alaska remember it. I'm sure the fishermen of Alaska remember it and still rue the day that Exxon ruined their livelihood. But not too many people live in Alaska, even though we get a lot of fish from there. Think about California and Florida. Next time you want to go on a vacation to the beach, chances are you're going to California or Florida. Now, I know other states have beaches, but does anyone have as beautiful beaches, as large beaches? They're the two largest coastlines in America, California and Florida. Now imagine them caked with black oil, drowning seagulls. Think about, even if you don't care about the environment, I know you folks do, but maybe you have friends and colleagues that don't, think about the tourist industry. Can't go to Miami Beach. It's black. Can't go to Redondo Beach, and I guess you could play volleyball in the black soot. And even if there is no oil spill, when you drill offshore, it's very different from drilling onshore, because a lot of times toxic chemicals get in the water. You know, it's on land that you can kind of clean up, but it's very hard to clean up in the water. And toxic chemicals from deep underground, poisons that were never supposed to see the surface, get eaten by plankton, who get eaten by fish, who get eaten by bigger fish, who get eaten by you and me. I like fish. I like fish. I like shellfish. Remember the scare last week about salmonella in tomatoes? Wow, those tomatoes left the shelves quicker than you could say, BLT, make that a BT sandwich, please. Now what are we going to do? Throw away all seafood? No more shrimp? No more clams? Flounder? Is that a freshwater fish? I don't know, but if you like seafood like I do, you should be worried about offshore drilling. Because what we're doing is we're taking the very last dregs of oil. Our addiction is so strong that it kind of makes me think of the guy who's high on cocaine. And he sniffs all he has off the piece of paper, and then he finds the thing that he bought it in, you know, and he sniffs all of that. And then he remembers he once spilled it down behind the, you know, under a chair, so he sniffs the floor. And then he remembered he once threw something away with it, and so he starts sniffing out his garbage because he's high and he's addicted and he just can't get enough. Well, that's how we are with oil. George Bush is now even talking about cooking rocks. Yeah, cooking rocks, shale oil. Taking rocks and baking them to get a little bit of oil out of them. Boy, I bet that does wonders for global warming. Baking rocks? He's going to squeeze a lot. Next thing you know, they're going to go into McDonald's to get the used grease from the fries and try to, you know, get every last bit of oil. I mean, everything. Hey, you know, that may even be more environmentally sound. You know, if you burnt, I don't know, every tree in America, maybe you could get a little oil. I don't know. Maybe if you see an oily human being, you could scrape it off their skin. What are we doing here? And meanwhile, Dick Cheney is giving speeches. You know what the solution is to our oil crisis, friends? You know what the answer is to our oil crisis? More oil. That's his answer. Yes, let's go down the same road we've gone down for the last 60 years because it's working so damn well. It's terrific to take all our national wealth and give it to Saudi Arabian dictators and Iranian dictators and Venezuelan dictators and Russian dictators. And we all know they use our money so well to finance people who then come and kill Americans. You know we pay for both sides in the Iraq War. Sure, we pay for our troops. And then we fund the insurgents because we pay oil. We buy oil. It gets to Iran. And then they fund the insurgents. Or Saudi Arabia. And then it gets to Al-Qaeda. Isn't that nice? Both sides have enough arms to fight because we arm both sides. And Cheney just wants it to continue because he's doing really well. Because, you know, Halliburton's doing great. ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil, I've said this before, but it always bears repeating. ExxonMobil has earned more money last quarter than any corporation anywhere in the world at any time in history. Poor ExxonMobil. They need more oil. We got to get them more oil. They don't have enough profits. And God knows, as long as Republicans are in power, we're not going to be able to tax their windfall profits. Obama wants to. McCain doesn't. And look at it this way. For every dollar ExxonMobil gets, dictators who hate America are getting $10, $20, $30, $40. OPEC, after one year, oil at $100 a barrel, they get close to $1 trillion. That means they could buy Apple computer in a week. In a week. It's a mere $2 billion, right? Excuse me. 20 billion. 20 times 50 is 1,000. Right, 20 billion. So, yeah, 1 week, they can buy Apple computer. General Motors, they can buy in 3 days. They own us. They own us. Do you know how much money this is? I mean, it actually dwarfs the war in Iraq. The war in Iraq is costing us about $3 trillion. It's costing us about $400 billion a year. And we spend more than that on oil. Oil, oil, oil. And the irony is that the war in Iraq is also caused by oil. We spend it coming. We spend it going. And, of course, we've lost 4,000 American lives, 40,000 permanently injured, loss of limbs and arms and legs and post-traumatic stress syndrome. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, millions exiled, and the price of oil just keeps going up. We're not even lowering the price of oil. 3 months ago, as you know, George Bush was at a press conference, and the reporter said to him that he heard that gas was going up to $4 a gallon, and he said, really? I hadn't heard that. That was 3 months ago. Now it looks like we're heading toward 5, possibly 6, possibly 7. And you know what the only bright side is to this very, very, very dark cloud? The silver lining is that Americans are finally getting it. The high price of oil has done a good thing. Americans are finally using alternative means of transportation. They're finally traveling on subway systems and metros and buses. They're finally buying hybrids. SUV sales are way down. Now, you folks know I'm not always a fan of Jimmy Carter. He and I have had our differences on a lot of issues, and I don't think he was that terrific a president. I'll say it right now. But I'll tell you this. About oil, Jimmy Carter was right. In the 1970s, he was the first president to raise fuel standards on cars in the 70s. He said we need to start moving America away from our addiction to oil. He recognized it would take some time. But you know what? That was 30 years ago. 30 years ago. We could have been there by now. If we had done what Jimmy Carter told us to do in 78, we could have been off of oil by now. The only thing left would be Mazola and Crisco. We could be using that solar car that Math Rothschild talks about. Brazil did it in eight years. In 2000, the great majority of Brazil's fleet, like the great majority of our vehicle fleet, ran on oil, ran on gasoline. And today, 80% on sugarcane. 80%! This is a country that's about our size in population, about our size in geographic area. It's a very large country. Sure, they can grow sugarcane more easily. They're in the tropics. We have to go to Hawaii to get that. It'll be good for Hawaii. But it doesn't just have to be sugarcane. It can be switchgrass. It can be soybeans. It can be solar. Because you know what? Our enemies in the Middle East don't have a monopoly on solar energy. They don't. They don't. In fact, they have a lot of it. Those of you that think that Iran has some innocent reason for wanting nuclear power, or Saudi Arabia has some innocent reason for wanting nuclear power, what about solar? Think about it. If we create, and I think Americans can do it, and I have faith in Americans, I have faith in our power of innovation, if we listen to Marcel Delusc or anyone else and create solar cars, we can go to the Middle East and say, you know what? You don't need nuclear power. And we don't need your oil. And you want to drive cars? Here you go, solar power. Think about it. Think about it. Virtually every war in the world, a large number of wars in the world have been based on resources, scarce resources. You know, at the beginning, people fought over land that could grow wheat and other crops, food. Later on, they wanted land that could make weapons, you know, iron and steel. And over the last 100 years or so, we fought over oil, valuable land, black gold, Texas tea, as they say on the Beverly Hillbillies. Sun is all over the world. Solar energy is everywhere in the world. Today, they're even developing it so it can get through clouds. Think about it. Every single place in the world has access to the sun. We don't have to fight anymore. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. You don't have to fight. You might fight over a river or a mountain or oil or a port or, but the sun? We all have access to the sun. If we develop the best solar car, I mean, that exists for what? The next few billion years? Think about it. Sun, wind, you don't have to pay anyone a penny for it. Maybe that's why corporations don't develop it. Because you don't have to pay for it. The best things in life really are free. The sun and the wind and the rain. 30 years ago we could have done it. It may take another 30 years. Frankly, we only got about, maybe we can only do it in 10. But Obama would put us on that path. John McCain, he'd do some more drilling. I hope you enjoyed the Inside Scoop. Today was my fifth birthday on the radio. Actually, Monday is the actual day. So you know, if you want to hold your gifts, and I won't open them until Monday, that's okay with me. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any comments, feel free to post them at radioinsidescoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.